This is Line One, your health connection, a weekly program produced at the studios of KSKA. Each week, KSKA's host, Dr. Thad Woodard, puts you in touch with local and national experts in a variety of health and family issues. Opinions expressed are those of the host, guest, and callers, and do not represent those of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. Here's your host, Dr. Thad Woodard.
Good afternoon. Welcome again to Line One, your health connection. Before we begin officially today's program, let me comment on some interaction last week that we had on the telephone with one of our listeners, and I think it's worth trying to clarify that. The caller, and I apologize for not remembering her name, was somewhat surprised sounding by listening to her that I had mentioned that perhaps the prevalence of autism in the United States has not been as dramatic or had even increased as is the general consensus. And I want to make sure everybody realizes the difficulty of answering what seems to be that very, very simple question. And we have three links on our website today to three different articles. Or one of them is the CDC's epidemiologic page on autism in the United States. Another is an editorial comment about is the prevalence of autism spectrum disorders, are they really on the rise? And I'm going to make some comments from that article in a second. And then another one is a link to a very new study reported by the Scientific American Journal in January of 9th of this year, which really makes a point that, yes, it is much more prevalent than it used to be. So how could there be this much disagreement? And the editorial that I'm referring to that talks about the prevalence of autism spectrum disorders points out that the rise in autistic spectrum disorders appears to be from about 1 in 1,000 children in the early 1900s in the U.S. to 1 in about 152 in the early 2002. One reason why it may appear to be increasing, or several reasons that are would camouflage the fact that it's really not that big, is that the definition has expanded. So now we talk about spectrum of disorders and multiple developmental criteria. Clinicians particularly are much, much more astute and educated about how to recognize autism-like illnesses than they ever been. I've had to kind of re-educate myself, particularly in the last 10 years as a pediatrician. Teachers and even parents are much more aware. So many more children are being brought in with autism or autistic-like behaviors. And we also know that autism is also part of and a component of other disorders as well. And then some kids may have coexisting mental retardation and other issues, as I've said, of which autism is not the primary disorder. But because of the fact that services are now available and you have to have certain diagnoses through schools and so forth, that there's a tendency for various reasons like that to increase the diagnosis of autism. So there's certainly a significant portion of the apparent increase has other causes. Is it enough to explain everything? I don't know. I would just point out again that I think we have to be very, very careful in making that assumption and look very, very carefully at the information we have. And that was all I was trying to convey. And I'd encourage people to go to those website and look at those links if they'd like to get more information on various aspects of this. Our topic today, however, is a whole different issue, and it has to do with nature and how is nature affecting health in both positive and perhaps even negative ways we should think about. And my guest is Bob Peart. Bob is a biologist who's got a big background not only in biology but in education. He's worked for 30 years not only in the government sector of Canada, particularly in British Columbia, but also with non-governmental agencies. And he's currently director of the Keyshoe Trust, which we'll ask him about in a short period of time. Bob, welcome to Line One.
Welcome. Thank you for asking me to be involved in this important conversation.
Well, you know, maybe a good place to start is I always like definitions. I was going to ask you what nature is, but that's pretty straightforward. You'd mentioned just as we came on the air, you were up here in Anchorage December 10th through the 11th for a conference. Perhaps that would be a good way to segue into what we're talking about. So why don't you tell us why you were up in Anchorage?
Well, Anchorage in early December had a gathering called Get Outdoors. And the purpose of this gathering was to bring people together from a variety of state organizations and state governments and individuals like architects, landscape architects, there were physicians there, just to have a conversation about children and nature. And the reason people are having that conversation about children and nature is because a very interesting book was written about 3 years ago. And this book is written by a gentleman called Richard Louv, L-O-U-V. The book is called Last Child in the Woods. It's a very readable book. I think your readers would really enjoy it. And what it talks about is getting children back outside to play. And it talks about the concern that seems to be arising in society in a variety of ways about the effect there is because children aren't outside as much as they used to be. And you and I can have a conversation over the next hour about what some of those effects are. But generally speaking, you know, if you go back, you know, a decade or two, 60 to 70% of children were outside playing. I know my mom said to me, now, Bobby, go on outside and play, and as long as you're home for supper. And you just went for the day. And now it's only something like 5% of children are just outside free playing. And so we were having a conversation in Anchorage about, well, what can Anchorage do? And Anchorage already is a pretty good outdoor town. Lots of trails and bike paths and things. But what could people more consciously do to try to get people back outside playing?
Let me remind our listeners that this is Line 1. We're going to be talking about the health and outdoor activities and effects on health. And we'd be interested in hearing your comments of anything you hear during the day, so give us a call. Or I also thought it might be nice to have suggestions about things that would encourage our listeners to have themselves and children get outside and enjoy nature more. So let me give you some phone numbers before we proceed. 550-8433 is our local number, 550-8433. If you're outside of Anchorage, the number is 1-888-353-5752, and you can also reach us by email at line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, all one word, line1 at kska.org. Why is it, what are some of the reasons why people and kids in particular are not playing outside as much as they used to? That 5 to 6% number is really shocking, maybe more so for those of us who live in Alaska because it is much more of an outdoors community than perhaps Brooklyn.
Well, in the past, you know, 20 or 30 years, without us kind of realizing what was happening, our lifestyle changes have accumulated with detrimental effects on children. And children are becoming less and less connected to the natural world. And the implications of this reality for their physical, mental, and social health, and also the social health of communities in general, not just children, are really enormous. And a lot of this is happening is because of what people aren't as comfortable just letting their children go outside and play. They're worried about what's called stranger danger. We can speak about that, but it's a bit of a myth that's been built up by journalists, and Richard Louv himself as a journalist would say that the statistics show it's just as safe as when I was a kid, you know, 25 or 30 years ago. But you wouldn't know that in reading the media. The other really real change has been screen time. And, you know, when I was being raised, we had television. And there are books written about the effect of television. There's Neil Postman's wonderful book about television called Amusing Ourselves to Death. Really an interesting book. And now it's more than television. It's text mail and everything. And children and youth are spending, 5.5 to 6 hours a day in front of a screen. And the other thing that is happening, and I think it's really important to say that this hasn't been a conscious thing. I mean, people don't wake up in the morning and say, how can we be harmful to children? This is just kind of happened in society as our lifestyles changed. And the other thing is that children are very, very active, but they're going to ballet, they're scheduled. They're going to ballet, they're playing hockey, they're doing this, they're doing that. And it's interesting, the statistics show that as children get more and more scheduled, their health actually is decreasing, and they're getting heavier and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the two or three main reasons why children aren't outside actively playing as much as they used to be.
Certainly, another thought comes to my mind as well is that the environment has changed. I mean, if it's as simply as we're bigger towns, we're maybe not taking as much consideration into having locations where kids can get out and play. Maybe that's not so much true of Anchorage and some of the western communities, but that seems to be the case. And then you can think even the house, the size of yards and houses are decreasing. We're not encouraging kids to do things like having a place to go fishing that's very easy to find, or to build a playhouse in the tree behind them, and so forth. So there's
yeah,
that change
right.
as well.
Yeah, neighborhoods aren't being designed and built, as you say, to allow nature to be as nearby. I mean, I used to just step out the back door, and again, you know, it sounds as if I'm 1,000 years old. But I used to just step out the back door, jump over the creek, and there I was. You know, and so those opportunities aren't there for children the way they used to be. Things aren't as accessible. I think the other thing that's really important, one of the real opportunities there is the intergenerational transfer of experience. And so when I speak about this issue, I speak to the uncles and aunts and the grandfathers and the grandmothers in the audience. And I say one of the most important things you can do is to, you know, grab the little tykes by the hand and take them outside and share your experience and your awe and your love for just kind of being outside with the young ones. And that's a very, very important thing we can do in society.
You know, I have read most of Richard Liu's book, and I would encourage anyone interested in children to pick it up and look at it. And it's an extremely important book called Last Child in the Woods, and it's a very, very easy read, and it makes a lot of sense. And what you've just said, I can't help but talk about this issue and remember going fishing with my grandfather and climbing trees in Dallas. And as you were talking, I'm trying to say, what will my kids now remember what was so important now that you're right? TV, cell phones, we're just not outside to the same degree, and we're not doing that intergenerational sharing and so forth, it appears to me.
And I think the children and nature conversation, however you want to frame it, it's really important to be framed in the area of health and healthy living, and I think it's really, really important to frame it within the sense of our urban environments and how we can change our urban environments to be more, to have more nature within them. But I think it's really important to say this is not an anti-computer conversation. I mean, computers are with us. They're here to stay. It's the way life happens now. It's the way life functions. It's the way people communicate. But we just need to be really, really careful, and we need to put it into context. A couple things I've been told, and there's, I don't know whether there's any, you know, evidence in quotes, but there's an increasing concern about the amount of time that young children spend in front of computers. You know, computers are very linear, and when you're young and your brain's forming, it's really important to be in a place like the outdoors where all your senses are interacting and all your senses are working kind of among and with themselves and in a random kind of way, not in a linear way. And there's increasing literature saying that a child, probably before they're 6 or 7, should have their time in front of a computer really, really strictly enforced, and really, really keep the hours down because of the harm it may have in the actual formation of the brain. And then you get into this, well, what are the ramifications of that? And you're the doctor, I'm not. But there are lots of ramifications. Well, then, boy, oh, boy, if the brain isn't forming properly, what's this mean for mental health and social health and behavior and all the other ramifications that come from that? It's a fascinating conversation because I started my career in the late 60s, early 70s as a naturalist in the national parks, giving slideshows and nature walks, and I just thought it was kind of cool to be outside with people. But now that, you know, 35 years later or whatever, and I reflect back on this and I start to think of the conversation you and I are having, certainly 30 years ago, I didn't realize the important connection being outside had to, you know, communities and society and urban design and health and all those other things. It's a very important conversation. And someone said the other day about Richard Louv's book, it's one of those books that had to be written.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I talk to parents all the time, I mentioned that what we're learning about how the brain develops and how it works, and this is oversimplified, but it gets to your point about early exposures and early things that kids do and have lifelong results, is the way our brain works to a large degree is it sets up circuits that are the more often we reward those or continually use those circuits, the more ingrained they are, the harder they are to change. The classic example is you learn how to ride a bike, and unless there's physical reason, the rest of your life, you can pretty quickly get back to riding a bicycle. So that what we do, what kids do very, very early in life sets up these patterns. And if the environment has changed so dramatically in the last 50 years, which is almost unarguable, at least in Western society, the exposures that kids are having now, even within the last 10 or 15 years, are considerably different than what you and I have and what you're alluding to. So that even if it's not going to cause problems, we have to be thinking, well, maybe it can and should, and perhaps it is contributing to some of the issues. Certainly, it's easy to talk about how our obesity problem in the United States is related not to just overeating, but it's not enough activity because we're not outside.
Well, that's true. And again, as I say, I'm not a researcher. I'm a biologist who's very concerned about this, and I'm an individual who spent hours in the outdoors sharing my love with nature. So it's more of an instinct for me than it is actual research. But whenever I read something like that about how important it is for children to be outside and how that helps the functioning of the brain, it seems logical from an evolution point of view. It links to a lot of E.O. Wilson's writing.
Right. Yeah.
And it just seems like the right thing to do. And, you know, certainly, you know, my nephews and nieces and my children and all that sort of thing, they're in front of computers. But I'm, as an uncle and a grandfather, I'm certainly telling the people that I'm connected to, I'm putting out a big, huge caution flag. You know, wait till these children are 5, 6, 7. You've got to be really, really careful about it because we do not know.
Let me remind our listeners again, my guest today is Bob Peart. We're talking about health and nature and how those two intersect and how they might each affect especially the health of humans. So if you have personal experiences or you hear something that's said today you want to comment on, let me give you a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Our local number, 550-8433. 550-8433. Our outside number, a toll-free 1-888-353-5752, and an email address, lineone, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, spell it out, kska.org. Bob, E.O. Wilson is for those who don't know him, he's a Nobel Prize winning biologist and has written extensively about nature. And he's coined the phrase, which I should comment is somewhat related to Richard Louv's phrase, the two very interesting comments. One, Richard Louv in Last Child in the Woods has coined the term nature deficit disorder. I think he's the one who coined that. And then E.L. Wilson talks about biophilia, which is kind of something he's trying to imply that either spiritually or deep in our genes in ways we don't understand, we're all still hunter-gatherers who've evolved very, very, very quickly into this industrial and now post-industrial revolution. And there's something about going out into nature that affects us differently than the way we live inside. And it's very innate almost, he feels.
Yeah, and you know, I certainly I believe that. And when Richard talks about nature deficit disorder, he's talking about all the human costs of alienation from nature. The diminished use of senses, you know, attention difficulties, the higher rates of physical and emotional illnesses. The disorder also isn't just an individual disorder. It's a disorder that is related to communities and the best use of space and how buildings are designed. And is the lack of nature in cities, how is that linked with high crime rates and depression and just, you know, the spirituality and of us as people. It's a very broad conversation, and it's something that when I read Richard's book, I guess it'd be a couple years ago now, was one of those ahas. It kind of, you know, pulled a bunch of things together that were kind of bouncing around in my mind. And the other thing I told Richard, I've met him half a dozen times, he's a really nice gentleman. And the other thing I told Richard, and I actually wept a little bit when I told him, was that what his book did was gave me hope. It's a difficult time in society today, whether your issues are economic or environmental or social. And every day you read in the paper about, you know, this species being gone, or, you know, this plane crashes, or this whatever, or diseases in Africa. And you just, sometimes you just want to crawl into a hole. But when you read a book like Richard's book, you say, boy, you know, there's some really important things to be done here. And what is more hopeful than having children outside laughing and screaming and having a good time and just being full of joy? And so, you know, I really thank Richard for writing his book. And I think that hope is one thing that society's searching for.
Tell us some more about why you were here and what the ghetto door strategy is. I'm just guessing that you know, the community here is trying to embrace this idea in a more specific way in how it designs outdoor spaces, but I may be wrong.
No, I think that's exactly right, and I think there were three or four things that came up in the conversation about how outdoor playtime can be better included in both school life and out-of-school life, the design of neighborhoods to allow nature to be more nearby and more accessible, the fact that outdoor environments need to be perceived as safe and friendly, and so how can they be designed differently? And then the other thing is to get children outside, not just on a one-off, well, there you are, little Johnny was outside and he never goes back outside again. It's got to be a continuous repetitive process for children, starting in preschool and working through to puberty and just after puberty. And if there's a continuous exposure to the outdoors and nature during that period of 10, 11, 12 years, the evidence is really, really clear. That person will then carry that joy and awe and wonder for nature throughout their life. And so the people in Anchorage were trying to have a conversation. And, you know, Anchorage actually is one of the really thoughtful towns in the sense of their use of the outdoors. I really acknowledge them and admire them for that. But they were having a conversation about what can they do better to have children, you know, understand, respect, and kind of be, I guess, free and happy and just willing to go outside as an option for something to do.
I think sometimes people appreciate that this is becoming an area of significant research. I like to talk about how we know what we know, but let me use an example of what you're implying about health and nature from an article here. I'm looking at a review of this is a recent study, 2008, in Lancet. Lancet is the English version almost of the New England Journal of Medicine, a very highly refereed and highly thought of medical journal that investigated the exposure to green spaces such as parks, forests, rivers, playfields as a determinant of overall good health. There's a large study of 40 million people were looked at in England, and they were stratified on the basis of income and access to green space. If they looked at all-cause mortality records, that means both heart and lung disease or even suicide, on records from 2001 to 2005 to look at a relationship between those factors of causing death and the association with income deprivation or exposure to green space, the major finding was that groups living in the greenest areas had the lowest level of all-cause mortality, and mortality due to circulatory diseases were really more related to income deprivation. So we've talked on this program about how there is a problem with health inequalities in a lot of ways. But this is one that the studies that surprised me as a very, very seemingly significant study with a large number of people suggesting that just being able to have access to green space is very significant effect on mortality. Does that surprise you?
No, it makes sense. Again, I'm not a researcher, but when I listen to you read that out, it makes total sense. You know, and I think that somehow or other, and I think this is a lot of what they were trying to do in Anchorage, was important to communicate the considerable health benefits of nature. And we need to make that clear to governments and farmers and developers and just the general community that this isn't just a conversation about getting people, making sure that ecosystems are set aside. This isn't just a conversation about the value and importance of the environment and nature in and of itself. It's about that connection between humans and the environment. There was a study I read the other day, and it was very interesting. Most children now, I think it was 77% or something, are not able to name the three commonest birds in their backyard. And so things like that. And there's certainly government in North America wide and worldwide, there's a downward support for environmental education by government. There, another factor that's keeping children inside is the ever-increasing homework load. It's, I think it's up to 2 hours a night or something like that. I mean, it isn't that homework, again, and studying isn't important, but we've got to put it into context and give children the opportunity just to have unstructured time by themselves. There's actually there's pressure on all the school districts now. I don't know about the states, but certainly in Canada, there's pressure. Time is becoming so pressured at school, they want to cancel recess because that would, you know, gain them 30 minutes a day. And so that kind of thing, that kind of direction that conversations are going in, it's disturbing. And as you and I said 15 or 20 minutes ago, the ramifications of this, we don't know what they are yet. The literature seems to be suggesting the ramifications are quite enormous. And there is some research that exists right now which is tying the amount of time people are in the outdoors. There's less bullying. There's less aggression. Children are healthier. There's weight loss. There's a link to attention deficit disorder. So that research is quite clear. So it's that connection with health rather than just with the environment is something that's really important.
It's fairly easy to imagine that some of the big health problems in our country right now, obesity and hypertension and diabetes and cardiovascular disease, may be linked to overeating and inactivity, and then just getting outside and moving around is helpful. But I've been impressed with my reading on this and how it relates to some of the this idea to the mental health activities, and certainly perhaps maybe one of the most important or best studied is this link to attentional deficit disorder that you mentioned. I don't read the literature as saying that is the cause. I look at it as another option for treatment. Do you want to expound a little bit on what your understanding is that about that association?
Well, that's my understanding as well. Again, I'm not a doctor, but my understanding is that you get someone who's, I guess, the prescription has been they've got attention deficit disorder, and then you take them in the out of doors, and you do pre and post studies and whatever there have been enough of this research done that it seems to be the nature is very, very calming. Whether it's predictive and whether the research is conclusive or not, I do not know that. But the literature is certainly heading in that direction.
It's, I guess I also think about my own personal experiences. And when I did do more outdoor activity, I'll have to be upfront that I have older kids and a set of younger kids. And with my older kids, we did a lot more outdoors. And I think one of the appealing things of it was less stressful. Exactly why that is, I'm not so sure.
So what do you mean when you say it was less stressful? What, you just kind of threw on a coat and went outside?
I meant, no, I think less mentally stressful is what I'm getting at. We kind of don't have the same time pressure, for sure. Mm-hmm. We have that ability to maybe let our worries disappear a little easier, too.
Yeah. My sense, too, is that when I'm outside now with people, it used to be that people were outdoors and they were kind of just enjoying the recreational experience. And it didn't really matter as much to them as to whether they knew the tree or knew the bird or whatever. And my experience now in the outdoors is that I'm being asked more and more often kind of, what is that tree? People are more namers, and there's more of a checklist thing. And then I'm sure, you know, and I've gone back and asked them like a minute and a half later, do you remember the name of that tree? It's completely out of their mind. But for that moment, they knew the answer to their question, so they felt pleased. But yet how the trees and the bugs and the birds all connected just wasn't part of the conversation unless you took them there. One of the really interesting conversations I had with someone when I was in the outdoors recently was about pollination and how we're so dependent on pollinators, like 60% of the food we eat or something is pollinated food, and yet the number of insects are decreasing. And so how is pollination going to occur in the future? And the other thing is interesting, too, is that with all the different airwaves and everything going on in our atmosphere, the insects are confused, if I can be anthropomorphic. The insects are confused, and so the directions that they're giving to their fellow people, their fellow bees and wasps in the hive, aren't as clear as they used to be. And so there's a lot going on within the pollination world, for example. And so then when you talk to people when you're in the outdoors and you start to make these connections and start to get them thinking rather than just naming things, it moves people to a different level, and they start to conceptualize. And certainly what I've been told by educators that I know, the people going through the school system now are not able to conceptualize as well as they were 10 or 15 years ago and not able to kind of piece things together. And when you're in the outdoors, I think it's really interesting, and the conversations I have with people about all the connections between everything.
Bob, we have a caller, and I think I'd like to go ahead and get his comments. Rich, you're on line one.
All right, thank you. Well, I'm a teacher for the school district. I was just actually, we're off today, so I was cleaning my garage and listening to your conversation. I also have a degree in recreation, and I think it's, you know, really important that we start to fund locally and nationally more recreation, because it's been going down for the last probably 20 years. You know, we talk about having neighborhood parks or neighborhood places where kids can go to play, but there's no money. You know, here in Anchorage, less than 10% of the budget is going to recreation. And it's just really sad. I also see in the school district, when I went to school, we used to have two recesses. We used to have lunchtime, and I'm pretty sure that we had two recesses a day.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were outside for a good, you know, hour to an hour and a half a day. That's another thing that I think is really contributing a lot to, you know, kids just not being able to play. I think it's really important for kids to play. you know, I see an increase in students that are in special ed. I work with a lot of special ed students, mm-hmm. and, you know, being out in nature actually really helps them. I believe for some of them that have attention deficit disorder and some of the other disorders that I work with, you know, it really helps for them to be outside and to get outdoor activity, get some fresh air, instead of, you know, I also used to be a probation officer, and I met several kids in juvenile hall where I remember this one child, he told me that he used to play video games 6 to 8 hours a day, you know, and that's most of the day.
Right.
So that's another thing. I'm dealing with that right now. My son is a really good athlete, but he also likes to play video games. So that's kind of a, you know, catch 22 deal where he, you know, he gets out and he does things outside and he swims, and but he also, you know, probably 1 to 2 hours a day, you know, does that, plays games, and, you know, there's a lot of gamers out there right now. And I think that's another, just another avenue for kids to use and not to not get outside. So and discover the outside world. I also like to fly fish. So I, you know, I'm very environmental, and, you know, mm-hmm. I pick up trash on the creek when I'm fishing, and, you know, those type of things. But it's, there's a lot of kids nowadays that have no clue about nature.
And Rich, when you talk about the need for more recreation, separate it to me how you're thinking about that. I'm thinking about this nature exposure, just stimulating, relaxing.
Well, I'm just talking about playing, mm-hmm. about being able to just, like you said, I don't know whether it was you or the person there you're talking to, when they were little, you know, your mom just used to say, hey, go outside, and you'd be gone for hours.
Right.
You know, you'd be playing, you know, ditch them on your bike, or you'd be playing hide-and-go-seek with the neighbor kids, or, you know, you'd be doing other things like that. So you know, I think it's really important to have kids get back to that. But, you know, another thing that I heard that you said was, you know, people are afraid. Of, you know, all the people that are out in your, you know, you could have a child molester living next door to you.
Yeah.
You know, and unless you go on the internet and check out the, you know, check out that list, you wouldn't know. And so people are afraid.
Yeah.
Now, I think, to just kind of let their kids, especially, you know, small kids that are 5, 6 years old, be outside just by themselves playing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's other places that I've lived or that I'm familiar with, like in I moved here from California about 15 years ago, and, you know, if you don't really play in South Central LA, you know, you don't just go out and play on the street because you might get hit by a stray bullet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's so many issues nowadays that why kids are not going outside, but it's I think it really comes down in the end to money and how much we're funding parks and, you know, the upkeep of trails. I mean, we have a lot of nice trails here in Anchorage, but they're not kept up. They're really
it's
not.
It's interesting, Rich.
I mean,
this is
the recreation department. I teach swim lessons, and I kind of I've gone over the budget. I see what is spent in the recreation department, and it's just not. It's really not that much. They're probably spending more on staff wages than they are on actual programs and, you know, equipment for kids. So, and I also, like I said, see it through the school district. You know, things have gone down.
So, Rich, this is Bob. I'm really encouraged to hear what you're saying about the effect nature has on your special education children. One thing I wanted to tell you about with parks is I think that our society is becoming really dependent on parks and recreation and on programs being offered, mm-hmm. whereas we used to just go out and play kick the bucket, or kick the can, I mean. And there's a person I know in Victoria, she put a note on each of their neighbors' doors and said, I'll be in the park next Wednesday, and we're just going to play around in the park. We might have a make-up soccer game.
Mm-hmm.
the first Wednesday, no one showed up. You know, the next Wednesday, there were three or four people. And then now, you know, a year and a half later, no one misses the Wednesday in the park. And they just go and play around. And they decide when they gather what they'll do that day. There's nothing structured. There's no government funding. They're just doing it on their own.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's really good. And that's really what needs to happen. You know, I really applaud some of the things that the school district does is really good. You know, like I'm looking out at a track and a football field, you know, a nice football field. You could probably use in a couple days if the weather gets warmer. And, you know, it's nice that some facilities aren't locked, you know, that you could go actually walk around the track or that you can do things like that. But there's other facilities. You know, there's a small gym over at the Diamond High School that does not get used. I mean, it just sits there for, well, you know, now it's probably been sitting there for at least 3 days unused.
Yeah.
So I think that's another thing that, you know, community organizations need to partner together to offer, you know, just a gym. Here's a gym. Just use it. You know, just go in. You got a basketball. Well, here's a couple ones we have. You know, you can use these. But just open the gym up. And
yeah, just go in and play. Just go in and, absolutely. The other thing, I think the statistic about child molestation and whatever, too, I think we need to remember that most of that kind of activity happens from family and close friends.
That's true.
And again, you know, the journalists and the media have just blown this thing all out of proportion, and that's part of what makes people nervous about being outside.
Yeah, that's true.
I want to
kind of go back to my first point that, you know, until we really start to fund things, I think it's not going to change. I think kids will spend their $50-$60 you know, per game on a game that they'll play for a few months, and then they'll buy another one, and then they'll play that until they beat it, and then, you know, it's just it's kind of sad that we just can't get our kids out, you know, enjoying the outdoors.
And that's what a lot of this gathering in Anchorage was about in December. Like, what can a thoughtful community like Anchorage do to get children back outside just enjoying.
Well, I wish I would have been there. Maybe I need to put a call out to, you know, I don't know who's going to be elected our new mayor, but maybe I could be the recreation director.
Yeah.
I would love to do something like that, you know, because that, you know, since the current one has taken office, they've added, I think they probably added at least 25 to 30 positions in the recreation department. But I really don't see a lot of change in the service and the programs for the recreation department. In fact, I just heard that they just cut the summer playgrounds position or summer playgrounds programs. You know, they've been offering those for the last, I think, at least 20 years here in the recreation department here in Anchorage, and they just cut that.
Richard,
yeah, I think the reason.
I have a couple people holding on the line.
Okay.
So, Rich, move on. Thanks for your call and
thank you.
Work at it. We would appreciate it.
Yeah, we need to work on the new mayor.
Okay.
Put in a sales tax and just put 100% of that towards recreation.
All right.
So,
we'll promote it. Thank you. Ramona, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Well, several points. First of all, I'm really happy to say to hear you say something about funding. We seem to have a mindset not only in Anchorage but in the state. We would rather incarcerate folks rather than treat them. Treatment does work, not only for mental illnesses but everything else, as you know, everything from toothaches to cancers. But my main point is that when you mentioned about the studies and whether or not anything research existed about outdoors, recreation, it does exist, and it's been there for a long, long time. One of the people that has been leading the way in this is Dr. Vanderkolk, and he's kind of in the mental health arena, about this as it relates to post-traumatic stress. But long before it was post-traumatic stress, as you know, it was shell shock and all that, and it was relating to veterans. Mm-hmm. But going back even farther and relating to recess, some of you who are more mature may remember back in the days of President Kennedy.
Oh, yeah, I did my 50-mile walks. I've been there.
You know, and even before that, even before those days, back in the 30s and 40s, when recess actually first came out in the elementary schools, and it was just in the elementary schools when it first became, is my understanding, when it was first started, when they knew that, and then it was because of the learning. They knew then, or they because of the research, they came to the conclusion that children learned better when they were able to get outside, mm-hmm. they had a break, mm-hmm. and they discovered, oh, mm-hmm. the brain will be able to not only hold on to what they've just learned if they have a break and get outdoors.
Right.
Get right. outdoors and right. play.
That's so interesting of you to bring it up, that that this is not necessarily new information, and I certainly can agree that Kennedy was trying to get us all out quite a while ago as well. And, you know, you're right. There is evidence that kids can concentrate better. They don't get distracted as well, and they do learn a little bit better with good activity levels. So.
And isn't that the reason, don't you think, too, that they cut the class period time? Wasn't it quite a bit longer at one time, and then they broke it back down from like an hour to 45-minute increments?
Yeah, that one I don't know. Don't know.
You know, I remember when I moved from Tacoma up to Kodiak, the mindset then, everybody at that time had to have in the, what was it, the Class A schools, they had to have 4 units of physical education in Alaska to graduate. They had to have swimming. There wasn't a swimming pool in Kodiak. The mindset was 3 minutes in the water and you're dead. Why do you need to know how to swim anyway? They would not. And you remember those days probably if you've been here long enough.
The logic of it just fascinates me, but go ahead.
Well, you know, the fishing town and all that, you know, and the fishermen wouldn't even, you know, they wouldn't even bother with the safety equipment or any of that because of the same logic, remember?
Right, right.
But the thing was that in the late 60s, they would not pass a bond issue to fund the swimming pool because of that reason. 3 minutes in the water, you're dead. Why do we need to know how to swim anyway? The mayor was very interested in having the youth involved in the city government. So he appointed myself and 3 other people, Jill and Joan Osterman, and whose brother now is a state legislator, by the way, and one other person to serve on the city council as this youth advisory committee. We did get funding for a park going, which is now actually behind what was the main elementary school. And we also got the town stirred up, and we eventually got funding. We got them excited about a swimming pool. It became a reality the year it passed. The bond issue finally passed, and it became a reality the year after we all graduated. But you know, that was the thinking.
Ramona, let me keep moving on. I appreciate your comments. I want to see what Bob has to say, and then I've got another caller. But thanks for your call.
You betcha.
Thank you. Keep listening. Bob, any comments?
I was just thinking as Ramona was talking that it's, you know, the considerable I guess, personal satisfaction and comfort that people get from the interaction with nature is really, really clear. And I think a lot of what she was saying there supports that.
All right. Tricia, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Oh, hey, thank you so much for this topic. I think it's really important. I'm the mom of a 4-year-old little boy, and I grew up in upstate New York amongst dairy farms and having frog egg fights and making tree houses, and been in Alaska for about 15 years. And one of the things I wanted to talk about is just, it's very important, I think, for the kids to see the mindset of the parents, you know, that they get outside. And I know one of the callers was talking about we need more funding for parks and, you know, things to do outside. But, you know, a solution for right now, today, there are lots of free things that people can go outside and do with their kids. One of the fun things my son and I like to do is I tell him we're going to the beach and we take a walk down in Point Warren's off, mm-hmm. you know, down by the beach there. And it's a perfect mm-hmm. place this time of year because the sun goes down right there. So you have, you know, mm-hmm. maximum light. And, you know, we talk about the different ice formations. And in the summer, he can, you know, play with the rocks. Another thing that's very inexpensive and sort of close by is the Eagle River Nature Center. They have lots of programs for different age kids. They get them out doing a variety of things. We go up and pick our own veggies in Palmer, and the kids get a real kick out of that because they actually see, you know, where plants come from, how they grow, and then they get to pick them and come home and eat them. And we just simply, I think parents and caregivers also just need to get really creative. You know, you can take a walk today or in the summertime and say, you know what, we're going to have a scavenger hunt and make a list of a few things and give it to the kids and go outside and find them. And I think, you know, once everybody does that, I know for myself and my son and other family members, you know, if you're feeling kind of pent up or frustrated or aggravated, getting outside, especially, you know, with the darkness, is a really important thing for all of us to do.
Tricia, you're the kind of mother we need.
I have one other question.
Okay.
You guys have touched on the amount of time kids spend in front of computers, and that's shocking. But also, you know, TV, especially for preschoolers, you know, there's right. a lot of, you know, obviously public TV, which I think has a lot of really good programming. But, right. you know, what is the suggested amount of time, you know, for, say, kids that are preschool, you know, to watch TV?
Yeah, the Academy of Pediatrics actually has a policy on that, and I'll have to admit I can't tell you off the top of my head. It certainly is recommends for older individuals to limit no more than 2 hours, which to me seems a little bit still egregious, but there is absolutely a correlation between the time spent in front of TV and some deleterious effects, and not only just physical activity but mental activity. So you're right on that. But like anything, there is some good and bad that comes out of it, and there is some very good programming as well, as you've alluded to. So I'm personally a little hesitant to absolutely ban it, but I think we need to be very, very cautious about the time we do spend in front of TVs and indoors, as we're talking about today.
Yeah, and you know, one last comment. You know, there are a lot of places in town, I don't want to speak poorly about them, that offer, you know, indoor playgrounds, like, you know, bouncing gyms and mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. And they are definitely a lifesaver, you know, for the cold weeks we just had, you know, in
right.
the recent past. But,
right.
you know, like I said, it is very easy to get outside. And, you know, Anchorage Parks and Rec, if it does get a little colder, they have great skating programs. You don't even have to have skates. You can just go slide around on the ice at, you know, Westchester Lagoon, the new Cuddy Park, all coming up, you know, in the next coming weekends. And they're all free, and they have fun things going on. You know, music, and they're going to have a Courier and Ives theme over by the library on the 30th. So you just really need to kind of put your thinking
yep.
cap on and,
yep.
and get out there and do it.
You've given some great ideas, and I want to thank you very much, because one of the things I was hoping someone would do would give us some local ideas and thought, and you've been very creative. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Bob,
the thoughts I had on listening to Tricia was I'd agree with you. I wish she was my mom. But I think it's really important to differentiate from a screen time point of view. It's important to differentiate between the effect of sitting in front of a television and the effect of sitting in front of a computer. They're different. And the other point that I thought was really important was, I was trying to make this point with Rich, our first caller, was that there's so many things you can do outside that are free. Just grab the little tykes by the hand and go outside, and it, you know, you may spend half an hour looking at a bug and a crack on the sidewalk. You know, that's a really important positive thing to do. It doesn't have to be structured. It doesn't have to be a program that you pay for.
And there are a number of things that you can do that are very, very creative, as Trish has recommended. And I'd also encourage people to go to the website of Last Child in the Woods, Richard Louv's site. He has a long list of very, very simple things like you're talking about as well, Bob.
Yes. Go outside and look at the stars.
Yep. We've only got a couple of minutes, but I think it's worth mentioning that there are some very impressive studies in taking at-risk kids who've been in trouble with the legal system and legal system and getting them involved in outdoor activities that are a little bit structured and showing dramatic improvement in self-esteem, self-confidence, independence initiative, and so forth. I'm sure you've heard of those experiences as well.
Yes, I have. Yeah, yes, I have. I think that increasingly we're seeing that physical, mental, and spiritual health are all enriched with an engagement with nature. And I think the challenge that we have is within ourselves to spend more time outside with our children, with our family, and in our family system to encourage people to get outside. But we also need direction, policy, legislation, and assistance from government to enable this to happen. And then we need a new thoughtful approach to the design of cities so that cities are better fit for children.
So people like yourself have been doing this for a number of years, and I suspect, again, that's what you're involved with here is helping Alaskans to think about the future and realize some of the changes in our environment are affecting us and will be affecting us in the future.
Yes. Well, it's one of those lifelong things, and I certainly thank my parents for, you know, booting me outside, you know. And everyone's also got a mentor. You mentioned your grandfather. Well, I had an older cousin, and whenever my older cousin came, he took me outside and he showed me the tracks of animals in the snow and pointed that the birds flying around in the trees were different birds, and even though they were all brown, they were different sizes, had different beaks, and so it was my cousin who was really important to me.
Bob, thanks very much for taking the time to spend with us. You want to sum up the one or two or three most important points you would like to leave with us?
Well, I think the unstructured play is very, 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 very important, and I guess I just encourage people not to be afraid. Just go outside with the little tykes and share your passion, share your love and joy that you've got for the outdoors. And if you're a grandfather or a grandparent or an aunt and an uncle, you can help within the family system and take some of the pressure off the other parents. I really encourage people to do that.
Thanks.
And I really encourage people to talk to government so there are stronger government policies related to this.
Thanks very much, Bob.
Good conversation. Thank you.
My guest today was Bob Peart of the Kisho Trust. Next week, we're going to be talking with Avery Gilbert. He's a scientist and a psychologist who's the author of What the Nose Knows, The Science of Scent in Everyday Life. So join us Monday, January 26th at 2 p.m. For KSKA and for Line 1, this is Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
This has been Line 1, your health connection. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508, or email us at line1@ksKA.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at ksKA.org/line1. CD copies of this program can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.